Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. There's a new and growing restaurant culture in Boston, and it represents a dramatic departure from the so-called fine dining tradition of high-end establishments with 20-page wine lists, starched white tablecloths, and waiters dressed in formal attire.
The trend has been underway for years now. The latest sign, Lockover, the landmark Boston restaurant that served high-end cuisine to the city's elite dating back to 1875, finally shut down last month. It joined a number of other fine dining establishments that have closed their doors in recent years, from Jasper's to the Excelsior to Aujourd'hui at the Four Seasons.
In their place, a growing number of more casual neighborhood restaurants, gastropubs and trattorias from East Cambridge to Boston's Seaport District, serving up sophisticated ethnic food to a new generation of hip casual diners.
So we're sampling the new Boston restaurant culture today on our program, and we're asking you, where are you eating in the city these days? Is that tradition of high-end, fine dining a thing of the past? And if so, what's taking its place? Give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter and at Radio Boston. And we've got a couple of great guests who know just about as much as you can know about eating in Boston. Joining us is restaurant critic for the Boston Globe, Devra First. Welcome, Devra. Great to have you.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Also with us is Ming Tsai. He's a restaurateur, cookbook author, and cooking show host. He's owner of Blue Ginger in Wellesley. Ming Tsai, welcome to Radio Boston.
Great to meet you.
Great to have you. Now, I want to just say, Devra, you're on a line over at the Boston Globe. You're going to be here in person, but because you like to keep your identity anonymous as a restaurant critic, you're not face to face with Ming Tsai.
Correct.
Nor with me, for that matter. But we're glad to have you just the same.
Thank you.
Ming, let me start with you. Your restaurant, Blue Ginger, it's got a great reputation as high end Asian fusion restaurant, but you're about to open a new venture in the city Seaport District, which represents, I think, the trend that we're talking about. Blue Dragon will be an Asian gastropub, less expensive, more casual. Tell us a little bit about this idea.
You know, it's very exciting for me. I mean, I've been 14 years at Blue Ginger, and I've always been proud to have one restaurant, but this is the right time, right place. The Seaport District, or Four Point Channel, call it what you want, is just bustling. There's 3.5 million new square feet of retail and office space going in the next 5 years. You've already seen the instant success of Legal Seafoods and Remy's and the Tequila Place. They're all along the waterfront. I know of 4 to 5 other restaurants going into the same area I am. And the casualness is where people want. It's how I like to eat as well. My wife and I, we eat at the bar all the time. And although I've been quoted saying fine dining is dead, it's not dead. I mean, Menton is still just thriving, right?
This is Barbara Lynch's restaurant.
Yep. Kenny Andre Clio, although he's modernized Clio a little bit, but it's still an amazing meal. Michael Schlout Radius, right? So there's still great fine dining. However, having said that, most of us are opening, when we do a second or third, is casual. Ken Orange is a great example. He did Toro, then he did Copa. So for me to do Blue Dragon, gastropubs have been hot for the last 5 years. No one's really done an Asian gastropub, and that already connotes fun, casual, good value, a place, a neighborhood place. You want the cheers effect, right? You want to say, hey, Norm, come on in and have a good pint or have a great cocktail. And for me, it's so exciting because it's also something that I don't have to be there day in and day out. When it's fine dining, you got to touch and feel the restaurant all the time. Here with my two great people, it should, in theory, run itself after it's set up.
Well, it's an exciting idea. I really look forward to going in there. Devra, there's Ming Tsai moving from Blue Ginger, not moving from it, but adding to Blue Ginger, Blue Dragon. How does that represent the evolution of what we're seeing around this city?
Well, yeah, as Ming says, that area is definitely shaping up to be a really hot area. There's a ton of stuff going in there. And I think people do like to say fine dining is dead. I don't think it's dead. I think it's evolving. There's not that sort of anonymous, generic, white tablecloth, obsequious waiter thing anymore. I think what we're seeing is really a more personality-driven kind of situation where we all know these chefs by name now. You know, they're on TV. We read about them online. There's tons of websites dedicated to their sort of every move. And so I feel like we know these people now. And so the restaurants that are opening are more casual. They do sort of capture the chef's personalities more. And we aren't looking for that generic experience anymore. We're looking for places with personality.
Well, let's just stick a little bit with this idea, because you're both sort of put out this idea, fine dining is dead, but then sort of pulled back from it. But I mean, it really has. We really have seen a change over the years. We mentioned Lockober, Excelsior is gone, Aujourd'hui is gone, Icarus is gone, Jasper's is gone. And then we've got these reinventions at places like Clio, L'Espalier, The Oak Room. I mean, there really does seem to be a move away from that kind of dining tradition.
Oh, I completely agree. It's like the five martini lunch. That's dead,
yeah,
as well. People, look, the economy is what it is, and that's no secret. And the last 3 years has been very difficult on everyone. So the idea of dining out is an experience to have fun, but you don't want to break the bank. Because
right,
if you break the bank, you're not going to go out as much as we love everyone to go out. So it always has to be a great value. There are always going to be special occasions. I mean, Thomas Keller with Per Se and French Laundry, they're always going to be there, and thank God they're there. But for a neighborhood casual spot, it is value. It has to be when you leave, that was delicious, great service, but it did not break my bank. Mm. And that's how everyone is thinking these days. And that is how us chefs like to eat as well. The last thing we do after service is want to go, you know, eat fine dining. We want to go to a Chinatown or a place that has casual bowl of noodles or casual dumplings or something of that sort.
I got to admit, you know, my wife and I, when we do go out on those rare occasions, our choice is always to find a place with a nice bar where,
yep,
you can sit at the bar but get the full menu and just have that sort of connection with the people who are serving you and just that casual experience.
Yeah, I mean, Olives is a great example, right? Todd English, he's,
yep,
been here forever. When he redid Olives, he built a bar three times the size of his original bar.
Hmm. Well, listen, a while back, I want to play a little piece of tape. We talked to Chef Jasper White about this very subject. As you both know, he ran Jasper's, a fine dining restaurant, for a lot of years and closed it down, opened up Jasper White's Summer Shack, which is going along there in Cambridge, informal atmosphere that serves seafood. Here's what he said about the evolution of the dining scene in Greater Boston.
What I see happen was, it happened nationwide, this general interest in elevating what they're eating, you know, and what's happened is American culture has evolved into a pretty sophisticated culture that demands interesting, good food. And what I see is great cheap eats around town, lots of great neighborhood restaurants, really talented young chefs, and talented chefs that have been here for decades.
So, Deborah, that's Jasper White. Do you agree with that? I mean, because he seems to be saying we're seeing less fine dining, but perhaps more sophistication these days, less fancy, but maybe we're closer to the food. What do you think?
I definitely agree with that. I think today's diner is much more educated and knows really just a crazy amount about food as compared with even just a few years ago. You know, some of that may be from watching food television. Some of that may be from traveling around the world. You know, people like Anthony Bourdain have sort of brought the world to us via our televisions and taught us about food all over the place. And I think, yeah, today's diner is quite sophisticated. And, you know, yeah, you know, the economy sort of maybe sparked this move away from a more expensive restaurant. But I think a lot of what we're seeing is very sophisticated food just served in a more casual manner for a lower price point.
Yeah. And Ming, I mean, to me, what Jasper said just really struck a chord, because, I mean, I think once upon a time when we went to a fine dining, sort of a fine dining restaurant experience, we thought about, you know, this was as close as you're going to get to sort of the best possible food. But the sense I get today is that's not necessarily true. I mean, the most authentic food is in this sort of new, kind of more casual, closer to the kitchen dining experience, if you will.
I completely agree. Excuse me. It's just like dining at home as well. People are doing more. People want family-style dining. So
yeah,
you see this trend in a lot of restaurants. They put the whole fish in the middle, which is a Chinese style of eating, right? Or you put, you know, David Chang in New York has a whole fried chicken all cut up. And it's fun, delicious, but I agree with Deborah completely. It's sophisticated. You see these mac and cheeses now. That's one of the most lowly things ever. But now you see mac and cheese with fresh truffles. You see mac and cheese with duck confit. So they're taking homey flavors that we call it comfort food, but elevated to a point that still makes a restaurant applicable, because you're not going to be making truffle mac and cheese at home, but you love mac and cheese. You see that on a menu at a restaurant. You're like, wow, this is fantastic. So I can get the cake and eat it too. I can still stay casual, have the food I love that makes me feel warm inside, but not break the bank. And I think that trend is here to stay. And I also concur with Jasper. There's so many great young chefs here that are just taking classics and just making it better, not necessarily making it bigger, because we had that trend with these chain restaurants making plates of food twice the size of our head. That's not a great trend, in my opinion, but making it better, making it tastier as compared to a fine dining restaurant.
Well, we mentioned, Ming Tsai, you're so well known in this area. You mentioned some fine young chefs. So did Jasper White. Devra, chime in here. Who are a couple of the new names that we should know about?
Devra. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you'd call him so new anymore, but Jamie Bissonette is doing some really interesting things at Toro and Copa, a lot of things with charcuterie, making really great versions of Italian dishes. And, you know, he and Ken Warringer are also having a little action in New York now, so hopefully they'll stick around locally as well. He's certainly someone to keep an eye on. Over in Newton, actually, and I think we're going to start seeing more interesting restaurants in the suburbs. David Punch, who's a chef at Ten Tables, and Lydia Reichert, they are opening a place called Sycamore that's coming up soon. And that looks to be really interesting. I'm quite curious to see what they're going to be doing there. Alex Crabb, he was a sous chef at L'Espalier, and he is opening his own place in Back Bay called Asta, and that one should also be very interesting kind of food, maybe something that we haven't seen so much locally. Will Yilson is opening Puritan and Company, which I think is a very anticipated opening in Cambridge. And
amazing to hear about all these opening, Devra. Can this market support all of this action? Because there seems to be so much opening up.
Yeah, I do think that there's a ton opening up. And I think particularly when you see it happening in clusters, it really sort of feeds on itself, like we're seeing over by the Seaport or on Congress Street. And I do think it can support itself, because when you go out, you know, these restaurants are really busy. The ones that are busy are busy, and the ones that aren't. But, you know, I think a good restaurant I think we can support as many good restaurants as will open. Mm.
Listeners, we're sampling the new Boston restaurant culture today on our program. We're asking you where you're eating in the cities these days. We're asking if you're applauding not the death of fine dining, but maybe the retreat replaced somewhat by more casual dining. Give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Ming Tsai is here, chef and restaurateur, and Devra First, Boston Globe food critic. Let's go to Janice, who's calling from Arlington. Hi, Janice, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say a little something about one of my favorite restaurants that can be found in Arlington Heights near the corner of Park Ave and Mass Ave. It's called La Posada, and it is a real Mexican restaurant run by real Mexican people, natives, and homemade. The food is made to order, and it's fabulous. It doesn't stretch your pocketbook at all. It's fabulous.
Oh, that sounds that's great. So that's La Posada in Arlington Heights. Thanks, Janice. We appreciate that. Ming Tsai, talk a little bit about the Seaport area. You mentioned that this area is just exploding. My guess is that a lot of folks who are sort of stuck in their traditions and habits, probably a lot of people listening to us probably haven't been down there. But there's a lot going on down there, right?
There's a ton going on down there. And, you know, on the waterfront, you know, when the museum redid with you know, the Louis people there, with there's like six restaurants now right on the waterfront that are beautiful. And they just absolutely are busy as anything the last two summers. It's bringing people to the area. There's the shows during the summer as well, under the tents. And and I agree with Devra, I love when you start getting a restaurant community. Good restaurants will always be busy. But what's cool with this new neighborhood building is that you can walk in, like, I don't know about the other ones opening, but Blue Dragon, you cannot make a reservation. It's that's part of the casualness. Mm-hmm. And But that's okay, because if you can't get into, Blue Dragon, if you can't get into Blue Dragon, you can go next door. Jeremy Sewell's opening place, or you can go next door over there. So now it becomes a restaurant community, which is fantastic for the customer, because they say, hey, we can go down to Four Point Channel, Seaport District. If we can't get in here, we'll be able to go there, there, or there. And that really becomes a destination, which is, for us, fantastic. And by the way, the convention center is a par three away. It's right there as well.
Mm. Deborah, I'd love to talk to you about some other areas of the city that might be sort of bubbling away. We just got a caller there about an authentic Mexican restaurant in Arlington Heights. I'll give a shout out to my neighborhood near Union Square in Somerville, where you find an amazing mix of really great casual eateries. There's Mexican, Peruvian, Japanese. There's a great neighborhood pub. There's two of them, actually, the Independent and the Precinct. There's a new tapas restaurant, Casa B. Then there's Journeyman, a restaurant started by a group of foodie friends that offer sort of prefix menus, pretty lavish and by all accounts pretty delicious and pretty expensive. So a lot going on there. Deborah, where else are you seeing sort of things bubbling away in an exciting way like that?
Yeah, well, I will definitely second your props for Union, because a lot of great stuff is really happening there, and it's always been an interesting, vibrant neighborhood. But definitely a lot going on. There's also a place called Bronwyn opening there from the folks who run TW Food coming up. That should be really fun. I think we're also starting, East Cambridge. You know, Inman Square has always had a lot of restaurants, but I think moving out a little further on Cambridge Street, we're starting to see things open up like Puritan and Company, which is coming soon. Coffee culture is sort of blossoming in that area. And also Kendall Square, I think, we've seen a lot of new restaurants opening there just in the last year or so. And I think, Boston is really competitive right now. We've added more than 4,000 new restaurant seats in the past 2 years. Rents have skyrocketed. Liquor licenses are very expensive. So places like Cambridge and Somerville, Newton, Concord, those are looking more attractive too, because there are sophisticated diners, outside of the city, and costs can be a little bit lower. So.
Mm. Yeah. Now, Ming, I know for obvious reason you'd probably like to tout this Seaport area, but other parts around Boston, other areas around Boston, attract you as a chef and foodie?
Well, I have to say, down Chestnut Hill, that area there, they have, it's not a restaurant, but it's Wegmans, which is an amazing conglomerate and fantastic food. And Danny Meyer's coming in with his Shake Shack, which is his first really move outside of New York with this fantastic burger. If you've never had it, they're absolutely delicious. I agree with Deborah completely, and I've been in the suburbs for 14 years. You can definitely get better value for rent and liquor license, all that, so that there's a huge move to build where people live. The great news, the cool thing that's going on in Boston and in New York, everywhere, is the customers are demanding more authentic, traditional flavors. Because, like Deborah said, they're traveling, they go to Thailand, they come back, they want a real Thai experience. And that's great for us, because then we can really not have to ever dumb down our food, but go the tradition, make it even better if we can, but we don't have to mute our flavors. We can go traditional, and customers are loving it. And at the end of the day, it's very affordable.
Mm. Well, Amy Beth Lipner tweets, if death, meaning death-defined dining, means a dining experience is relaxed and fun, then yes, I'm for it, but I'm lapping it up. Craigie, TW Food, and Bon Deer. Those are three Cambridge-based restaurants. Let's take a call. David is calling from Sudbury. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you today?
Very well. What's on your mind?
Well, I was driving along and I was listening to the thought of white table dining, white tablecloth dining going away, but I called in because I thought we definitely can't have that disappear. While we love the variety of restaurants throughout New England, I mean, we can't lose the formal dining.
That's important to you, is it?
It is, but yet, the little fun restaurants with the nightly specials and local produce and all of that are, they're wonderful. We need that explosion, but we can't ever do away with the old formal traditions.
All right, David. Well, it may be retreating, but it's still there. Yeah, Ming, go ahead.
So, David, how many times this year have you been out to a fine dining restaurant?
I'm embarrassed to say, probably too many.
Too many. Okay, well, good. I was expecting the other answer, so that's fantastic. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think there is still a place for fine dining. I just feel that most of us chefs aren't going to be opening three more fine dining. because just for all the reasons we mentioned. But there absolutely is a place to celebrate.
And Deborah, you mentioned, you know, Boston chef Barbara Lynch. She's made a go of it. Her high-end restaurant, Montan, down there in the Seaport District, seems to be surviving, right, despite predictions to the contrary.
Yes, absolutely. Though I wouldn't say the food is traditional fine dining in sort of the Lochober sense. You know, I think people don't necessarily want to eat that traditional food, even if it is served in a formal tablecloth-laden environment. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Barbara Lynch, with Montan, she's also got Sportello and Drink in that same area, and that is sort of brilliant because those three can all sort of feed off each other. You know, a very expensive restaurant, a mid-price restaurant, and a very fine cocktail bar. So they
sort of feed off of each other, right?
Yeah.
Let's get another call into the conversation. Aaron is calling from Jamaica Plain. Hi, Aaron. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Sure.
I wanted to comment on the rise in quality of, like the traditional hamburger. I'm referring specifically to grass-fed in Jamaica Plain, and I think they may be connected to 10 tables, but I'm not sure. But I was wondering, I'm seeing, like, more and more, like, kind of better upscale burgers, like places like grass-fed, places like new gastropubs that are opening up. And I wanted to know if this is, like, a more of a local trend or is this a national thing?
What do you think, Deborah?
I do think it's a national thing, but I think it is huge locally. This has sort of been the year of the burger. You know, we had kind of a rise of like $20 fancy burgers made with, you know, this and that, very high quality meat. But I think we are also starting to see, you know, a higher quality, you know, not as cheap as like a McDonald's burger, which isn't actually that cheap anymore, you know, but a sort of mid-price to lower price, yet high-quality burger. And, you know, really at just about every restaurant in town right now, I think you'll find a burger on the menu, even if it the rest of the restaurant sort of skews toward a more polished plate. There will still be a burger, and it'll be, you know, a good burger made with grass-fed meat, maybe a specialty blend, you know, on a brioche bun with whatever house-made ketchup.
Ming Tsai, you travel all over the place, all over the world. I'd love to sort of get a sampling of what's coming to a menu at your new place soon. What are we going to be sampling?
Well, again, it's based after a gastropub, but with Asian influences.
Mm-hmm.
For example, behind the bar, quite often gastropubs, you have the bartenders shucking oysters. Well, we're going to do an Asian sloppy Joe slider for $1. So the bartenders plate that up. You sit down, 2 second fire time. There's your sloppy Joe. We're going to make a delicious fish and chips. It will be panko crusted fish and chips with the Chinese black vinegar aioli. The best French fry. We've been making French fries for about 6 months now. I think we finally got just the best chips, because fish and chips without chips is not going to happen. But we're going to have some family style stuff. I think one of the signature dishes is going to be a hacked Peking duck. So we're going to make traditional Peking duck. But again, take out the pomp and circumstance of slicing the skin and then the meat. We're actually going to just take out the backbone and hack it, bone in and all, put it in the middle of the table with the hoisin sauce. Again, to be able to have fun and eat your food. So a delicious, authentic Peking duck, but done in a fun atmosphere. Hopefully next to your dragon bowl, which is going to our version of a scorpion bowl with the long straws and everything. So
it sounds great.
It's going to be someplace you're definitely going to have fun as well.
Deborah, you feel like lunch? Did that?
I'm pretty hungry now, and I'm also thirsty.
And we will, to Deborah's point, we'll absolutely have a delicious burger
for sure. That sounds good. Deborah, final thought from you on this. You know, where do you think all of this shakes out? I mean, a decade from now, are we going to be talking about even more of these small local eateries and casual dining places opening up, or sort of where do you see the city looking down the road?
You know, I think it's sort of one direction or the other. You know, it's going to be small local places, or it's going to be big, heavily funded places with celebrity chefs that everyone knows about.
Well, great talking to both of you. That's Deborah First. She's a food critic for the Boston Globe. Deborah, thanks so much for helping us get a sample and a feeling, a taste for what's going on out there in Boston. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Ming Tsai is a chef, restaurateur, cooking show host, and cookbook author. And Ming, you've got a new cookbook out, Simply Ming in Your Kitchen. And I believe we're going to have you back on the show soon to talk about that. We look forward to that.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much to you. Listeners, stay with us. Coming up, a photographic diary of the climate crisis from glaciers to coral reefs. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Trakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.